You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper, and you're listening to our episode with Ann Court, Senior Vice President of Disney Theatrical Group and the founder of Women of Broadway.
Just a heads up as we start this episode, guys, this was our first time recording remotely with a guest, and needless to say, it was a little tricky. So please bear with us as we go through it. You'll end up hearing much more of Kara than myself, but overall, we had a great conversation, and we can't wait for y'all to listen. Have a good one. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And today we have our first remote guest on our remote podcast coming from you from my office. Jessica's coming to you from San Diego,
La Jolla.
And today we have Ann Court with us. She is the Senior Vice President of Production at Disney Theatrical Group. She is also the producer of Women of Broadway, which just celebrated its third annual Women's Day on Broadway, with both Jessica and I were at. It was incredible. Hillary Clinton spoke. It was amazing. It was actually very shortly before Broadway shut its doors due to COVID-19. But not only does she strive for women's voices to be heard in that way, but she also is promoting change within Disney Theatrical to better support mothers in our industry. And we are beyond honored to have her here with us. So welcome, Ann Court.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you.
Oh, thanks so much.
I know.
We were so excited for this episode.
I know.
I'm so happy that we're finally doing it a month later.
Me too. Who knew we'd be doing it this way? But I'm glad we were able to make it work.
Me too.
Same. Likewise. Thank you for playing along and being a bit of a guinea pig with this, Anne. Thank you.
Happy to.
We always lead off our episodes asking about your children, because we feel like that's a question that most women don't get asked about in any sort of workplace. So tell us about your kids.
Yeah, no, it's true. Nobody ever asks. I have two beautiful daughters. I have a 14-year-old, and her name is Madeline, and she's a freshman in high school. And I have a 7-year-old whose name is Zoe, and she's a first grader. And they are very different, but they are also both very awesome and strong and smart and funny and my favorite humans in the whole world.
I think that's awesome. Pretty safe to say our kids are our favorite humans, right?
Favorite humans.
Most of the time.
Yeah. I don't know. They have their moments, especially when they get to high school, they really have their moments. But even then, they're still my favorite humans.
Ooh, I am not looking forward to that.
No, it's true. You know, I always thought that kids, when they were little, were so hard because, you know, they're so vulnerable and feeding and breastfeeding and diapers and the whole thing. And I always thought the minute they got self-sufficient, it would be easier. I would take an infant any day over a teenage girl.
It's just
that's. I sort of thought that might be the case.
Yeah.
Holy
we don't. We don't realize how easy it is when they're infants. Even on the hard days, at least you can put them down and they won't go anywhere and they don't talk back.
They take a nap theoretically. If you have to, you can put them in the car and drive around, which Jeff and I did with my first over and over again, drove around New Jersey. But no, the teenager thing, they have opinions and they think they own their own lives and it's all very challenging.
Oh my gosh. I can't imagine.
In this time, I mean, having two school-age children and such wide differences, you know, high school and elementary is she in first grade?
She's in first grade.
Yeah, first grade. So having them in such different places and having to, I'm assume, homeschool, right? Like all of us right now. Are you having to add that on to, I'm sure, what is already a very full plate, still working from home? Or did your husband take in more of that on? Or?
Well, actually, it's the time, you know, it's interesting the timing of this because my husband works on Broadway as well. He's a technical supervisor and has been doing that for many, many years. And as we were headed into this calendar year, my workload this year, I mean, no one predicted what we're currently going through, but before this happened, we had an incredibly challenging year with many, many, many shows opening internationally. Mm-hmm. And as we approached that year, Jeff and I talked about how we were going to balance him being in tech and me being on an airplane a lot. And he offered to take a year off and be at home with the girls so that I could leave and not worry about, I mean, you all know what it's like, right? When you go on a business trip, it's not just like, see ya. You have to figure out what are all the play dates and what's everybody eating and what's the potential drama that could happen while I'm gone. But so he did that last October. So he's actually at home still in that same frame of time that we had talked about. So he's full on teaching mode and is downstairs with Zoe doing writing and reading, and she'll run upstairs with something and sometimes I'll go down and check. But, you know, as much as we're working from home, I'm working a 16-hour day just to try and figure out what we're doing. So it's great that he's here and can be dedicated to making sure that she's getting done what she needs to get done. You know, the year already was crazy. We had 8 shows opening in Europe over the course of 3 months and a show in Japan and a show in Australia. And that is all now in this very complicated matrix of every country trying to tell us what they're doing and what they think, when they think they're going to be able to have audiences back in theaters. And so every week is different and everybody has a different schedule. And so we're constantly toggling and figuring out how we can make it all work. So that's what the days have become, which of course is what it's like for everybody. And the truth is we don't know what we don't know. So we're all just trying to create 5 different options until we see some sense of what this thing does.
Were any other shows closed before Broadway closed? Had you shut down any other international productions? Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
We closed down Beauty and the Beast in Shanghai was the first one. And then our productions in Tokyo, we have 5 productions running in Tokyo. Well, in Japan, really. And they all were closed before Broadway closed down. And then after Broadway, it was very quickly Europe and then everything was gone.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. I want to ask you, because this is a question we ask all of our friends or guests who are on the other side of this or on stage, right? So you're on the other side of the stage. Were you concerned having children that it was going to affect the way you and your work was perceived at Disney Theatrical? Was that a concern for you at all? Or was that not something that crossed your mind?
No, it absolutely was. I mean, the truth is I was the first woman at Disney Theatrical to have a baby.
Really?
No one had ever had a baby. I mean, I've been at Disney for a long time. It will be 18 years in at the end of this month. So I was the first one to ever have a baby there. So they didn't quite know what to do with that. There was a lot of fumfering around about, you know, I wanted a curtain so I could breastfeed in my office, and that felt all a little odd. And I used to, not because anybody, what I never felt was any hostility by any stretch. That was just a completely unknown experience for everybody. So no one knew what to do. But I would, I remember in the early stages when Madeline was just born, I kind of around 4:30 pretend I was going to the bathroom, and I would like leave the building and head back to New Jersey so I could be home for bedtime. Wow. So I did a lot of stuff to kind of represent that having a baby was not going to change my ability to do my job.
In doing that, do you feel like you made huge sacrifices or compromises to yourself for your own mental health and your children?
It's interesting. If you the word sacrifice doesn't quite feel right, because I feel right. like I have so much in my life to be grateful for that it's hard to categorize it as a sacrifice. But I do feel like it was unbelievably difficult, because when Madeline was first born, Jeff was, he was home for about 10 days and then he was gone. And he was really gone for about 5 years, not because he was opening shows on the road and that was what his job was. And so I was a single mom in the middle of all of that. And around the time Madeline turned 8 months old, I was offered it was a handful of complicated situations, but I eventually was offered the job. I was production manager when I first started at Disney on Lion King. And when she was 8 months old, they offered me the associate producer's job. And I then had to start traveling the globe with her. And we went to Paris and opened the Lion King. We went to Las Vegas and lived on the Strip for 4 months, which I do not recommend to anyone. Do not try. And that is, nobody should do that. We went to Las Vegas. We went to Germany. And we went to London. I just packed her up and we went. And that's how I got through those first 5 years. In that new job as an associate producer, I was the only woman who was an associate producer. And, I felt a real need to make sure people knew that my having a child wasn't gonna stop me from getting on an airplane.
Yeah. That's incredible. Did you have a nanny that traveled with you or?
Yeah. So I did it differently every time because every time was slightly different circumstances. But for instance, when I was in Paris for 4 months, I packed up the nanny and we went. Mm-hmm. And in Las Vegas, I had somebody. And yeah, everywhere I've been, I've had some kind of childcare with me.
To be the nanny in Paris.
Well, I have to say she had a pretty fantastic time.
I bet.
Would come home from work and she would disappear into the night and had all kinds of fabulous French friends that I didn't have any of that. But, she was 22 and living in Paris.
I feel the same. We traveled to Australia when Book of Mormon opened there for my husband. We were there for 3 months and we brought a therapist for our daughter. And she was 24 years old and she had the best time. She would do her therapy and then she would go off and I'm like, I wish I could go off and explore.
Totally.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've taken childcare all over the world and every country is slightly different, but yeah, I always feel better taking somebody who I know and then I can know that the kids have something that they feel comfortable with.
Absolutely. So I just hearing you talk about your experience as the first woman to have a baby at Disney, and certainly Jessica and I know that's not the case anymore, even in being with meetings with you, there are lots of mothers there. Yeah. I don't know if this connects to Women of Broadway, but what was it that prompted you to start Women of Broadway? And for those of you listening, I'm just going to do a little blurb about what it is. Disney's Women of Broadway builds a community of women, including all those who identify as women and or non-binary, who are working in or fans of the Broadway, off-Broadway, and professional theater industry. Each event is meant to offer an opportunity to share experiences, struggles, and victories with the goal of supporting each other to make our industry stronger, which is incredible. You are such a leading voice for women in our industry. So was there a moment that you were like, I need to do this? Or how was Women of Broadway born?
Yeah, I mean, I will give you the very truthful version of all of it, because it was really the combination of three different things. And there was a handful of things. One, it was the Me Too movement had just started to be present in the world at the very beginning. We had held a second opening night for Frozen and we had releasing one day, and Tom had said to me, what do you want to do with this extra day? And when, and I, at which point I said to him, I think we should do an event for women. It's that Frozen is a show written by women about women. And let's make use of this moment in time. All of which is the backstory for all of that is my having many conversations with women in the industry, moms who, not just moms, actually, women with and without children, who when you sit down and you get real about how hard it is or how things have not gone, have been difficult, or how you've been, you felt like you've been, you can't get your voice heard, to have a woman across the table, couch, bar stool say to you, God, this is so nice to have a conversation where we can talk really about what it is to be a woman in an environment where there are a great deal of men. And then my own personal coming to terms with the fact that as a woman in a position of responsibility and with a certain amount of profile, I had not done enough. I'd come into my career in an arena full of men. I'd run a scene shop in my early kind of mid-20s. And then, you know, at Disney Theatrical, you know, my family there is many, many men, all of who I love very much. And I really felt I needed to do something. I had a responsibility and I wanted to not preach. I was had zero interest in creating an agenda for women. That is not, that's not what I want to do. Just create an opportunity for dialogue, for one woman to say to another woman, that's an amazing story. That really encouraged me because that happened to me, or I'm struggling with that. That just to give an opportunity for a sense of community. I didn't want it to be political and I did not want it to be negative and I did not want it to be preachy. I just wanted it to be a place, a box, not even a box, but like an umbrella where women could have a space and a conversation.
And feel comfortable to say the things that they haven't been comfortable to say up until now. I mean, I feel like that's, in our society at large, I feel like that's a conversation that's really starting to, or has gained momentum, just women being able to talk about their experience openly.
Absolutely.
Well, being at the Women of Broadway event a couple of weeks ago, gosh, it feels like a lifetime ago now, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
All the changes that have happened. Oh my goodness. It was so empowering and so fortifying. I feel like Jessica and I left wanting to do more than ever before. And it's interesting that you say you weren't trying to preach. There's not an agenda, because I think that's really similar to kind of what Broadway Baby Mamas has been for Jessica and I, just a safe space, a safe space to talk and connect and not feel alone. But I will say, being at the event and hearing so many incredible women speak, there was a lot of advice given on how we could empower the next generation and how our experiences can help promote change and help our ideas in this industry to shift a little bit more and to shift other people's perspectives, not just the women who were there. But not with an iron fist. Like, you really, it was a very loving event and it was incredible. And I'm so glad that we were there.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Let's see.
I wanted to talk to you, Anne, because I do think that it's no surprise that you've begun Women of Broadway with regard, especially to what Kara and I know about how your example within Disney Theatrical, with regard to better standards for women who become pregnant, or the concessions you have made, or the work you've done to try to advance maternity leave situations, and just such, and also, like you've mentioned, how you make sure there's a room for pumping in every theater. I mean, the things you've done, that obviously it's directly connected to the fact that you are a mother and your experience as a woman and as a mother. And would you be willing to tell us those things? I mean, we know, you know, we've come together and met with you on better business practices that you'd like to put forth. And I think it's important for people to know that that is being worked on, and that there are people in positions of power and in leadership positions who are actively trying to help us advance a little past, you know, where we are.
Yeah. I'm happy to talk about, you know, the handful of things that we're working on. I think that the more I dig into these issues of women and their ability to feel comfortable in the workplace and own the fact that they have children. Somebody said, you know, it's the time for children to be kind of contraband for women is over. You know, so many women I know of a certain generation simply didn't talk about the fact they had children. They just simply didn't do it. And I think that we have an obligation to try and fix that kind of situation. So, look, I'm incredibly blessed to work inside an organization that has a set of values that supports my being able to say, I think we need to make sure that there's a pumping room in every theater, and I want to talk about maternity leave. And I'll also recognize that within the Walt Disney Company, we have resources that others don't have. So I want to say all of that first. But one of the things that I am very passionate about, and my staff is tired of hearing me drone on about it, is this issue specifically about women on stage. And I recognize there are issues for women off stage as well, that eventually, you know, that we need to also be dealing with. But with women on stage, who use Princess Jasmine as an example, if the woman playing Jasmine gets pregnant, I can't have Jasmine pregnant. The whole freaking story falls apart, right? But it feels incredibly wrong and immoral to me that that woman, because of that set of circumstances, her doing this extraordinary thing of carrying a life, means that she loses her job immediately, like 6 months, 7 months before she would normally to go on maternity leave, and potentially then loses her health insurance weeks, depending on what health insurance she has. And I that for me has become a real, it's a drum I continue to beat. I haven't solved it holistically. We have come up with a handful of policies. We had a woman on Frozen who became pregnant, and we were able to have her move to an offstage track, and she sang the show, and then we put somebody on stage, and we were able to keep her employed all the way through her maternity leave, which kept her with a paycheck and it kept her with her health insurance. And I don't know if that is the best solution, but it was a way that I could figure out that helped fix those two issues of a loss of salary and a loss of health insurance. I think we need to solve this as an industry. I don't know how that happens, and but I really think that this is it's kind of shocking that there is not a more comprehensive maternity leave policy in this industry, but not just for Actors Equity, for everywhere. Yeah. And that's one of my big drums that I continue to beat. And also just with the women on my staff, you know, to say you've had a baby, you know, everybody says, I'm going to come back on this day. And then it's, you know, but we, all of us who've had a baby know that you have no idea what it's going to be like, you know? So I've always been very like, tell me when you're going to come back. And then a week before, when you decide that's a terrible idea, then we'll work with you. And then maybe in the first couple of weeks, you're going to come back and you're only going to work 5 hours a day, and that's okay. And you want to be home for bedtime, and, or baby's up all night. Like, there's just a million things and we'll just figure it out. I'm not worried about it. And Disney has a very, supportive maternity or supportive policy in terms of extra weeks for child bonding that are really great. And so we're doing the best we can, but there is so much left to sort out on this topic. And I'm annoying about this.
Well, just the fact that you're searching for a solution at all. I mean, that is so encouraging, especially, I mean, we've been talking about this for so long, I feel like, within our community, and we keep coming up against a brick wall. And for our listeners, you should know that Disney Theatrical operates on a separate contract than the rest of Broadway. So you have negotiated with Actors Equity a specific contract. So your ability to do things is a little bit different than the rest of the industry at large. But just the fact that you are trying to do something is incredible and encouraging, and the momentum that we all need. And it needs to be seen that something can be done for people to think it's possible. So the fact that you were able to give that cast member an offstage track, that she could continue gaining her health insurance week. We know so many women who have lost their health insurance when you are the most vulnerable, either right before you have a baby or right after. And it's not okay.
It's not okay.
No. So thank you for recognizing that. I'm going to go through, I'm looking at our questions too. Jess, are you moving on to this? And this is a little bit less about motherhood, but a little bit more about where we are as a community, in the world. How are you feeling about the future of Broadway and theater? I know that you are dealing with this every day. And obviously, like you said, you're trying to think of five different solutions to a scenario we don't really understand yet. But I think that we are all feeling the complicated emotions of the unknown right now. And I wonder what your take is on that.
Yeah. Well, I echo your feelings of it being incredibly emotional, incredibly complicated, and incredibly, I have in my lifetime never lived through anything that I have no point of reference for, right? You know, we've all lived through shows closing before we wanted them to close. We've all lived through that hell. We've lived through the firing of a choreographer, a director, a designer. We've lived through that. We know what that feels like. We know what the stages of that look like. You know, we've lived through various things that are incredibly difficult and traumatic and painful, the loss of, you know, somebody important, all those things. But there is no point of reference for this. We don't know what the arc looks like. We don't know where the middle is. We can't see what it looks like at the end. And so I think that is unbelievably terrifying and frustrating. And for those of us who spend our whole lives trying to manage knowing what the next 10 steps are, it's very frustrating. I'm very, very clear in my absolute knowing that we will get back to where we were. I just know it because I think you can't put an entire globe through this kind of trauma and not need the arts to heal that. And people will want to be together. You know, there'll be fear. There's no question we're going to have to navigate between now and the time when there's a vaccine, how people feel about being in a closed space. And I don't have the answers to those questions yet. Nobody does, I don't think. But I have absolute certainty we'll get back there. My energies now are going to how do we get through this middle piece, this piece where we don't know what happens next. So I can tell you that, you know, I talk to people all day long here and all over the world, and everybody's grappling with it. Everybody is being really genuine and full of grace with each other and allowing each other to be angry and allowing each other to be frustrated and scared and sad. You know, I spoke to my staff my larger group of my staff about 2 hours ago, and without and got myself all upset and broke down in tears with them on the phone, but with not because I intended to do that, but I just, the gravity of all of these humans stuck in this state of unknown is so painful. But, you know, Tom Schumacher and I, or Tom, who runs Disney Theatric, we've been through a lot of various fires together, nothing like this, of course. And he has a saying, which is, the only way out is through.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. We have to just go through this. Whatever this is, we just have to go through it until we get to the other side.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is I feel like we're in a production of Groundhog Day, because every damn day, you know, you wake up and you can't leave the house, and the kids and I'm on the lookout for a moment of hope, for some sense that the numbers are coming down, for some sense that there is a hope that there is the other side of this.
Yeah. Well, I think what you said, just saying you know the future holds a place where we will get back to where we were before. I mean, that's hope right there. I mean, that's exactly what that is. And I think as a member of the theater community, I mean, and the world at large, if we can't imagine a future without this pandemic, then, you know, you can't get through the day to day. So you have to envision that. And I to bring it back to motherhood, I will say that having my children has kept me from going down this spiral of doom, because I see them and I see, you know, my kids are 6 and 3 and they are not really aware of what's going on. No. We talk about the big germ a lot, but, you know, just for safety purposes. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy that they don't have the weight of this global experience that we're going through. I'm so happy that they are going to remember this time as the best of the time of their life. They had mom and dad home all the time. We are sitting down to family dinner every night. They are getting us tucking them into bed every night. And I hang my hat on that every night. At the end of the day, I say it's been a good day, you know, even though there is this crushing sadness and fear in our world right now, it's been a good day. And I am fortunate to say that, because we are not being directly affected by this virus. And I don't mean to say that anybody out there, I know there are so many people who are being directly affected, and I don't mean to come across as insensitive to that. I'm just saying that is today what's getting me through.
Yeah.
You know,
and everybody has to find the thing that's going to make it okay to get up the next morning and start all over again.
Exactly.
I also do think that when the dust from this has settled and we have grieved what we've lost, right? Because there will be grief that comes with this. I think there's going to be hidden treasures of what we gained as a result of this moment of global pause.
Yeah.
And I don't know what those things are right now, but I do think that they're out there. I think that we'll see that.
Yeah.
I agree.
I said that to Kara just the other day. I was just saying, you know, this is a hard reset for humanity, you know, that we're all in this together. And there is some comfort in knowing that the entire world is on pause. To a degree.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
And definitely. One day we will get back. It might be, a very long time from now, but you know, we'll be back. We do have to get through it. And for sure.
And who knows, speaking specifically to what you have, you know, been fighting for, maybe there will be a greater understanding of that for all the people who are at home right now, with their families, with newborns, you know, all the things that go along with that. We're all experiencing that in a different way than we ever have before. So maybe the framework for change and the ability to have people see different perspectives will benefit us in that way. Who knows?
No, go ahead, Anne.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think for many families, and this, you know, I'm lucky because everybody in my house is healthy. And I know that's not the case with everybody, but I think for many people, this moment of family time, that's so different. I think there is going to be a foundation that comes out of that, that will be pretty extraordinary.
I agree.
I just want to say thank you so much, Anne, for being a leader in this industry, an advocate for women and for mothers. And we are so lucky to have you on our side, to have you fighting for us and recognizing that changes need to be made and moving forward, hoping to make them. So thank you.
I just want to thank you, Anne, for coming and not only being on the podcast, but for leading the charge and representing women and mothers in our industry across the board, on stage and off. You are a voice of strength and a voice of reason. You know how to get things done, which is impressive. And you, I think that something that Jessica and I, our emotions run so hot that you come in with such a temperament that is admirable and something we want to emulate. And we wish you all the luck in dealing with this current state of affairs and juggling it all as you've been doing before, but now in extreme circumstances. So
thank you for that. And what you guys are doing with this podcast is amazing. And I've always been such fans of the community you've created. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you.
Bye. Me too.
Yeah, yes. Talk to you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song. Our producers, Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.